doing, right? You're branding yourself. You're figuring it out what your story is that's going to connect with people out there so that you can build that.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors, to therapists, to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. Welcome to Motivation to Write. I am delighted that you're joining me today. I have Karen Happel. She is a personal branding expert, and she's going to talk to us about how how bloggers, authors, and writers can develop a personal brand and how they can market their work. So let's learn a little bit more about Karen Happel. Karen Happel is a personal branding expert and founder of Genuine Content, a marketing agency that helps authors and entrepreneurs develop three-dimensional brands that tell a cohesive story. Karen spent her early career as a casting producer in the reality TV world, where she learned how to connect with people from all over the country, draw out their story, and relay that story to network executives. Originally motivated by her passion for the television industry, what Karen found during those years was a love for storytelling and human connection. Great marketing, she believes, is rooted in the art of storytelling. Whether working with an entrepreneur just starting out or a Fortune 100 client, Karen has a passion for finding the personality in every business.
I am here with Karen Happel.
Yep, Happel.
Okay, Happel. And you know what? It's so funny. I actually started an Instagram account 3 or 4 days ago, and I've been making like a little video every, not on Insta Reels, I'm not there yet, but just on regular Instagram. And I made one today because I forgot to plug in my car last night. So when I went to, I have an electric car. And so when I went to go to work this morning, it wasn't charged. I only got like barely enough mileage to get to work.
Oh no.
And, you know, so then at the end of the video, I said, you know what, but I'm excited because I'm interviewing Karen Happel tonight. I was like, I'm going to follow her. And I bet she has a bazillion followers. And I see that you do, but I'm glad I followed you because I love your Insta Reels. They're so fun. You are a personal branding expert. And what is the name of your company?
Genuine Content.
Genuine Content. I love your website. That's a great website.
Thank you.
And I was wondering if you could give us a little background as to how you got into personal branding. And you were also a reality TV casting director.
I was.
Kind of played a part.
Yeah, of course. So right now I have two things going on. I own a website and branding agency called Genuine Content. And so I work with companies and we build websites and figure out their brand. And really what I do is I help companies tell their story through, you know, a website and everything that they do online. And then also, you know, just through this Karen Happel personal branding expert, I work one-on-one mainly with authors, helping them tell their story online. Mm-hmm. And really what it is, it's storytelling. You know, if I go back to the beginning of my career, I went to school for television production. I moved out to Los Angeles and, you know, it was kind of the beginning of the reality TV boom. And I said, I'm never working in reality TV ever. And then all of a sudden there I was, and I started working on the second season of Hell's Kitchen.
Mm.
And you know, my boss at the time said that I could go out and interview for the jobs that I really wanted, right? She knew that my path wasn't going to be in reality TV, but, you know, as I stuck around, I ended up there for another season and I started looking at what the people above me were doing, and they were traveling around the country and just talking to people about their lives. And I thought that was just so cool. And before I knew it, I just kind of started climbing the ranks, and that's what I was doing. You know, I got to just travel the country, hold these big open calls, or kind of, you know, sometimes they were you know, smaller things where I would spend like a week with a family and we'd film them and I'd interview them. And it was just, I love people and I love storytelling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether it was, you know, chefs on all of Gordon Ramsay's shows, I did, you know, MasterChef and a bunch of his stuff. And then I also did The Biggest Loser and Extreme Makeover Home Edition.
Oh, wow.
It was just really neat. I kind of became really good at finding America's sweetheart. That became my thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was a really incredible time in my life. I did it for almost 10 years and then I was just exhausted. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a high burnout factor. There were long days. Sometimes I went once a month without a day off and it was just exhausting, you know? So I kind of threw in the towel and moved down to Orange County and I started over. I got just like a random marketing job. And that kind of started the beginning of my marketing career. I went from behavioral healthcare randomly to aerospace. And I was doing marketing internally for those companies. And I learned so much. And about almost 3 years ago, I got laid off. And I was sitting there and trying to figure out exactly what I wanted to do. And I realized it was my time to start my own company.
Mm.
And
that's a good thing to do.
yes, it has been. I think some people are just meant to be their own boss and there are pros and cons that come along with that, right? But mm-hmm. I absolutely love it. And now what I've done is I've kind of compiled all of these different skills that I've picked up along the way. And from, you know, the storytelling of reality TV to web design and branding. And now what I'm really passionate about is working one-on-one with people, helping them tell their stories. And so the author thing kind of came along. I had a friend who was a literary agent and she's like, she would start sending her clients to me who needed to figure out exactly what their message was and how best to tell it online.
Right. That, I love this because storytelling is big in marketing.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And so how your journey just started with listening to people's stories. You know what? I find people so fascinating too. I always, like, I used to live near downtown LA.
Yeah.
So there's like this huge homeless population, but every time I would see a homeless person, I would always wonder like, what's their story? Like
right?
From birth to this point, what happened? Like everyone is a walking book.
You know? It's so and true.
Yeah. That's great. So you, like when you went into marketing, did you have any like formal marketing experience or was it something you just naturally picked up or you learned on the job?
I think I just kind of learned it all on the job. I mean, I took marketing 101 in college, but just what I was doing in television, a lot of it transferred over really well. And then I was just kind of eager and I went to the boss of my company and I said, hey, you're paying these people a lot of money to do graphic design. If you pay for me to take a class on my own, like I'll learn Adobe and I'll do the design work. And so I learned that. And then, the next company, they needed me to fix their Squarespace site. And so all of a sudden I was in that and learning that. And so,
That's encouraging. Yeah. Because I think a lot of, especially people like authors or writers, bloggers who want to market or learn about it, I think they feel it discouraged because they weren't formally taught or they don't have like a business background, but it is possible to pick up this skill, to read books, to learn, to
absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think for creative people, sometimes it can be discouraging because, if you have a really large creative side of your brain, sometimes a lot of that business stuff doesn't come naturally like working with engineers was really interesting for me because I picked up a lot of like that organizational stuff, but my boss was like a super engineer and I was a super creative. And so, our brains just work differently. And I think you can get really discouraged with that. But, I think if you just throw yourself into anything, there's really nothing you can't do.
Right. So someone like me who is a blogger. Well, let me tell you a little bit about how I got into blogging because it kind of ties into what you do. So 10 years ago, I self-published a children's book. The publisher said, you need to build a platform to get the word out. And they said, do a blog. And this was 10 years ago. I mean, blogs were just barely starting. I mean, they had been around, but they weren't as big as they are now. I really didn't know what I was doing. I started a blog. I didn't know what to write about. So I initially just started blogging about like the journey of my publishing my children's book. But then once that book was published, I didn't know what I was supposed to write about. So it was just kind of random stuff. Like this happened to me today, or I read this book. I really loved it. And I felt so lost in the process. The interesting thing is I kept that blog up until about 5 years ago, but off and on.
Yeah.
But it still felt like I was just missing something. And that something was, what am I trying to sell? Like, am I selling myself? I'm not really selling the book. I don't know what my message is. It was very frustrating. So now I've kind of revamped. I have a new blog and it's aimed at helping writers step into the best version of themselves. And you know, reach their writer potential. Where does personal branding come into someone like me who wants to spread the word about her blog?
Yeah, it's everything that you were just saying. You know, a lot of these clients that are people that I've been talking to, they're running into the same problem, right? Either an agent or a publisher is telling them that they need a platform and they need a following. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding people don't really know where to start. Mm-hmm. And so I think the first really what you're doing, right? You're branding yourself. You're figuring out what your story is that's going to connect with people out there so that you can build that platform. Mm-hmm. And I think authors have an advantage in that, you know, authors are natural storytellers. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I think it can be difficult to pick out the most important parts of your story that, like you said, are going to sell the right thing. I work mainly with, you know, nonfiction authors and people who are experts and, you know, hoping to put a book out there. And so in that case, really what it is, right, it's establishing yourself as an authority in one specific space as it relates to the book that you're putting out there. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, because I think a lot of times people become experts in their field. And if you Google somebody, right, all of a sudden, all the different links that show up are different because people have done so many different things in their lives.
Right. Yeah.
And so it becomes a matter of figuring out what that one message is and finding a way to make that Google search all say the same thing. So that if somebody Googles you, they go, oh my God, I want to learn from that person. If that makes sense.
That makes sense. So as a children's book author, and I kind of forgot about that book. I'm not trying to sell that book currently.
Yeah, of course.
But when I had initially published it, the ideal thing to do would have been to establish myself as some type of authority in children's literature or children, or how would that work?
Yeah, so it's a little bit different once you start crossing into fiction. How you brand yourself from fiction to nonfiction changes a little bit. My expertise is really on the nonfiction side. Okay. However, I actually did work with somebody who was putting a children's book out there. And what it became about was he was a balloon artist. And so we started coming up with different ways that he could create activities for parents to do with their kids. Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm. And so you start to become kind of an expert in that space. Mm-hmm. No matter what it is, when it comes to social media or building a platform, the first thing that you need to do is understand exactly who you're trying to reach, mm-hmm, who your ideal reader is. Right. And then if you can get into their head and help figure out what problem you're going to help them solve, then that's the content that you're going to be putting out there that has to get weaved into your message. Right. Mm. So I think for a lot of fiction authors, the problem that you're helping solve, right, it might be boredom, might be people frustrated with, you know, their Facebook feed right now. And, you know, just don't want to deal with all the seriousness, you know, you're offering an escape, I think, in so many ways. Just figuring out exactly how to put content out there that's going to draw people in that way. I think that's the key for fiction authors.
Right. Because I was talking to a marketer named, I can't believe it was just last night. This is so horrible. Anyways, he was a wonderful person. Please forgive me. I his name will come to me. I'm glad I'm not the only one. Right. So he was saying that you really need to find the person's pain point. And yes. And you're trying to solve a problem for someone.
Yep.
So for someone who is bored or is tired of reading their Facebook feed or whatever, you got to figure out some way to present a solution to that.
Exactly.
Right.
In a way that relates to the book that you're writing.
Right. Okay. Okay. Yeah. That can take a bit of thinking and creativity.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what I always have people do is I have this exercise called the client bio. Because when I was a casting director, anytime that I found somebody who I thought would be great on the show, we had to sit down and write their bio. And that's what we showed to the executives. Mm-hmm. And so I instruct people to figure out exactly who their ideal reader is and create a mm-hmm. fictional person, right? Even if even if the information that you're putting out there can be helpful to a group of people, you describe one person. What is, you know, his or her name, age, where she lives, do they have children, what is, you know, their occupation, do they like their job, what are their spending habits, what are their favorite websites, right? Like, you really just create this three-dimensional person.
That's what they call the avatar, right?
The avatar, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you just speak to that person, no matter if you're, you know, posting something on social media, sending out an email, writing a blog.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how then does, because I'm still thinking about like me as a children's book author, because I'm selling to the parents, right? I'm not really selling to the kids.
Yes, you are selling to the parents.
So I would have to figure out how to solve a parent's problem or pain point.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. Okay. Because I always see on Twitter, because I follow a lot of writers, authors, and they're always, you know, dropping their links to their books. And every once in a while, you'll see this string of like complaints where they're like, I don't think anyone's like reading my book or clicking on the link, or no one's purchasing my book. I don't know if I'm wasting my time on Twitter. And it's because people aren't really looking to buy a book as much as they are to feel something, right?
Yes.
And I think, yeah. And so that's kind of where I think this branding comes in. Like, if you establish yourself as some type of authority and build a relationship with your audience.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And so there's something called the 80-20 rule, where 80% mm-hmm. of the time you should be creating content that delivers value. So that the other 20% of the time you can put those links out there to your book and stuff like that, because people have already bought into you by that point in time because of the 80% of stuff that you're putting out there.
Right.
But without that buy-in, right? Like, nobody's, if they don't already know you and like you and trust you, they're probably not going to click on a link that you put.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of imperative that authors have a website.
Yes. Yes, the author website, I think, is really important in establishing that brand and, you know, exactly what story or message it is that you're putting out there.
So then as for a blogger, you really need to focus on like building a relationship with the audience, which would mean that it's more than just posting your articles. And
yes.
That's it. Like, I mean, there, you have to figure out creatively how to actually have conversations with these people that are reading
yes.
the blog.
Exactly. So like, one of the things that you can do is, okay, so you put out content, right? And there's nothing wrong with the content if it's not getting engagement, if nobody's seeing it, right? So your job as a blogger or a content producer of any way is getting your posts and your work in front of more people, obviously, right?
Right.
Like, that's
yeah.
your platform.
Right.
And so one of the little tricks that you can do is you can, if you understand who your ideal reader is, you reach out to a Facebook group where your reader frequents,
yeah.
right?
Okay.
And
yeah.
you reach out to the administrator and you offer to do some kind of workshop of some kind, or a Facebook Live or something like that. something that's going to offer value to that group. And, you know, all you ask for in exchange is, you know, you can offer some kind of PDF in exchange for emails.
Okay, right.
Or something like that, right? And then all of a sudden, you're just like in front of these people and you are regarded as an expert in the thing that you're there to do, right?
Right. You know, I just kind of started back on Facebook.
Okay, and, I know.
Yeah, I had been off since 2012 as well.
Oh, goodness. This is a strange time to be getting back on there.
Yeah. It's very different than last time I was there.
Yeah.
And it's just, I can't even, I was just amazed at how much, first of all, information they require from me. Good grief. I felt like I was putting my whole life just publicly.
Oh, my goodness. Site. Yes.
And I wanted a page for my blog, but I couldn't do that unless I had a personal page.
Right.
And then someone suggested, well, try establishing a group. So I feel like I have three different things I'm trying to juggle. But what I figured, because I want to, just as you said, I wanted to expand my audience, I joined a few groups. But I don't know what to do once. I mean, no one's really talking to each other. I didn't think about contacting the administrator and this idea. That's a good idea. But I'm kind of amazed that like these books are just, I mean, these clubs are like crickets. It's basically just the administrator publishing stuff, but no one's really like networking or talking to each other.
And when you think about that, right, if the administrator has a pain point, it's probably that nobody is active in their group.
Right.
And so if you reach out to them and you offer them a free activity for the group, then that could help them kind of invigorate their group and get people talking.
Huh. I know a lot of marketers suggest using like a free PDF or download to get people on your email list.
Yeah.
Also, which is, okay. So how this concept of going live, because I see this on Facebook, this Facebook Live, and would this tie into what you're suggesting, holding some type of live event perhaps?
Yeah, but it's similar, but just within a group.
Within a group, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. How powerful or how effective are live things? Because I know there's Facebook Live, there's Instagram Live, I think, also.
Yeah.
Is that something you would suggest to authors or bloggers to reach their audience?
I think so. I think they can be very effective, but you have to promote them. Because if nobody knows that you're going live, then nobody knows that you're going live.
Oh, right.
So, yeah. Right, it's almost like you have to so, you know, I'm going to be live at X time talking about this thing so that anybody who's interested in that thing that you're going to be talking about will be there.
Right. This, the concept of personal branding.
Yes.
When I think of personal branding, I think of really kind of capitalizing on someone's personality.
Yes. Yes.
Is that what it
absolutely.
Is?
Absolutely. It really, really is. I think the personal brand is so important right now, you know, especially as the internet has become bigger and bigger, and especially now that people are more and more isolated, people are craving connection. Mm-hmm, and so the more personable that you can make your brand, people will start to feel that connection as they interact with you on social media or through your blog or whatever it is that your platform is. And so by being authentic and really kind of putting yourself out there in a way that people can relate to, I think you have a much better chance of building that platform.
Yeah, it's interesting. I had conversations about authenticity and how, like what that means exactly as far as like promoting yourself, because I like some people might take authenticity a little too far. Like, you know, something like, you know, go totally Cardi B and you're like going off and you know, someone, they would say, I'm just being real. But it's, you know, I don't know if you want to be that real.
Your personal brand should be planned.
Okay.
You should have I like to have a certain like bucket of things that I can always pull from that I know are like safe within my brand. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's, you know, it's my dog. It's my love for coffee. Mm-hmm. It's, but you won't ever see me posting about my relationship. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. I have like mm-hmm. things that I talk about and things that I don't. And then occasionally what I do is I push beyond the boundaries to offer a little bit of vulnerability.
Right. Yeah.
And then that's what people really kind of attach to when you do that. Right. But the one thing that I like to say is you don't confuse authenticity with a diary entry. Like you don't want to use your platform as a diary and just put all of your garbage out there. Right. Cause we all have garbage.
Right.
But if, what I try to do is those moments when I am vulnerable, I come from a place of solution, you know? So here's something that happened in my life and here's how I dealt with it. Maybe that's something that will help you as well. Mm-hmm. As opposed to like, this thing is happening and I'm a mess. And I, cause that's how I spent my 20s.
Right. Me too. Yes. I understand completely. Yeah.
So,
you know, I think people can also, take authenticity in the other direction where they feel like they have to put on a persona that's like authentic to their field. So for example, if I am, I don't know, if I'm a chef and I have like a chef blog, they want to come, like they want to just be total chef. Like there's no, none of them. It's just total.
Yeah.
But it's like, important to be authentic.
Absolutely. It's too much filter.
Okay.
Right. You're like filtering your story. It's the, you know, it's the perfect Pinterest mom, right? Where you're just putting out like the best parts of your life and all that kind of stuff. I think real authenticity and vulnerability is showing a little bit of the tough stuff too. Mm. You know?
Yeah. So what would you say to someone who's just really timid and, or maybe not timid, but who's just scared, who's scared to open up and be a little vulnerable? How important is it to show vulnerability every once in a while?
I think that everybody's personal brand is going to be different and it's going to be something that's very true to you. Mm-hmm. I am somebody who's always had a really easy time of kind of letting people into different aspects of my life. Mm-hmm. But I do think that it is that moment that you push past fear a little bit that people are going to connect to. And finding the type of content that you're comfortable delivering makes it a lot easier to put yourself out there a little bit more, right? So if you love taking photos, if you love writing, right? Like that should drive the type of content that you're putting out. If you're a great speaker, video is something that you should be doing, even if video scares you. You know, if you have a way with words when you speak, right? Like video is something you'll get over the fear eventually. So that kind of helps a little bit.
Yeah, because I think there's the fear, especially for writers. First of all, there's just the fear of even writing an article for your blog because you're scared people are going to read it and judge it, or maybe not read it at all, or whatever. So then when you talk about being a little vulnerable, that just I don't even want to write a plain academic type article. I can't throw a little vulnerability in there. Are you kidding me?
I know. But here's the thing, right? Like the fear comes from not wanting haters out there, right?
Right.
But the moment that you start getting haters means that you're starting to become a little bit successful.
I've heard that. That's a good way of thinking of it. So how would you handle, because it might happen that, I mean, eventually, if you keep with it, you're going to have people that are going to say some not so nice things.
Yeah.
How do you keep your confidence? How do you maintain your confidence? How do you keep going in the face of criticism?
I've surrounded myself with people who are at a similar place in the same realm of what I'm doing. And I have a group of girls and we have a weekly Zoom call where we all kind of share where we're at in our development of the things that we each are doing. Right. And what I found is that we take turns, on the weeks where some of us are doing well and other ones are struggling with whatever it is. And so I think that helps a lot, kind of just keeping us all on track and learning from each other. Like, you can't do it alone, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Especially writers, because you can get so isolated and stuck in your own head.
Yeah, you can. It can be a lonely, and for some people it's a hobby, for some people it's a career, whatever it is, it can be very isolating.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes it scary sometimes to even, I know writers that don't want to, appear on film or video or even post their pictures. It's just, it's just very absolutely. Private.
It's really common, actually, a lot of people. And then all of a sudden they have an agent who goes, I'd love to represent you, but you don't have a following. And that can be really discouraging,
Can we talk a little bit about LinkedIn? Do you know anything about LinkedIn?
I'm not a LinkedIn expert, but I do know LinkedIn.
I've had a LinkedIn account for years, but I never, ever used it. I just didn't really get it. And I'm kind of starting to revisit it. I visited it today and I have 3 people I've connected to all these years. It seems like a lot of, I don't know if it's more personal branding or business branding happening on that site.
Yeah.
I don't even know what I'm trying to ask. I heard that it's a very, if you post something on LinkedIn, people will see it, versus on Facebook, it might get buried or whatever. Has your experience with LinkedIn been that you're able to reach more people?
If you're posting consistently, if you kind of go in there, this is the same with any social media platform, right? Like, if you post twice in 1 week and then you disappear for a month, the algorithm of whatever platform is not going to show your post to as many people.
Okay.
But if you're consistently, maybe once a week, putting a new article out there or, a new post and getting people to engage with that post, then the algorithm will show your posts to more people because it knows that you're going to consistently create content for your followers.
Because it seems like that would be a really good space to do, as you're suggesting, with Facebook, just kind of interacting and connecting with people and offering workshops or what. It just seems like it would be an easier networking space.
LinkedIn. It depends who you're trying to reach. If you're an expert in a field that's very business oriented, then that's probably where you should be, but if your ideal reader is, mom struggling with infertility, then LinkedIn probably isn't where you should be.
So
I think identifying exactly what platform you should be on and just starting with one to begin with is something that a lot of people miss out on, right? They're like, okay, I'm going to do social media, and they try to do all the platforms. You're just setting yourself up for disappointment, right? But if you choose one, you're like, this is where my reader is, and this is the type of content that I'm going to create, and you just stick with it, even on days that it feels like no one's reading any of your stuff, right? Eventually, you will start to get traction.
Can we talk about Insta Reels? Because I saw 2 of yours and it just seems like you have to be comical. You have to be funny. Like, yours are funny. And I don't know if that would work for me, just to be that.
Yeah. So I hate doing reels.
I'm glad you admitted it.
Oh my God. It's like, I have someone who helps me with social media. We've decided I'm going to do 2 reels a week and twice a week. Oops. Did I lose you? Are you still there?
I'm still here.
Oh, I had something pop up on my computer. I'm sorry. So twice a week I get a message from her where she's like, "Hey Karen, where's your reel?" Okay. But first I'll start with why reels are important right now. So Instagram, whenever it has a new favorite child, it incentivizes that. So if you're doing reels right now, early adopters of the reels, Instagram's going to show them to more people. So, and also everybody's making mistakes right now because it's new. So why not just get in there and make your mistakes while everybody else is making mistakes, and you can kind of figure it out that way. As far as having to be funny, you don't, it's actually a really great opportunity to show your expertise in any in any arena.
Okay, I was thinking about that because I think they're limited to how many minutes those reels or seconds.
It was 15 seconds. It's been increased to 30.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, so I've heard people say, yeah, these are great opportunities to teach something in 30 seconds. How in the heck? I know you can fast forward, which would be one. But for me, yeah, as a writer, what am I going to teach in 30 seconds? I mean, I can't fast forward something without sounding like a chipmunk. I guess that would be funny, but yeah. I don't know how to. What am I going to do? Help me out, Karen. What am I going to do?
You'd be amazed at how you can take one concept and break it down into little segments, and then all of a sudden, instead of one video, you've got four smaller ones, and it's almost like a to be continued type of thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know,
yeah, so like part one, right? That I had one that I had a bunch that were, you know, the three different types of engagement. Mm. So the first type of engagement is this, and there were little like 15 second ones, and I'm still learning, and some of them sounded a little infomercially because I'm trying to speed through.
Right. Okay. Do they have to have music? Because it seems like it's like TikTok, where when I think of TikTok and Insta Reels, I think of dancing, I think of lip syncing, I think of whatever you're doing, there's some type of music happening behind you. Does that always have to be the case?
It doesn't have to be the case, especially if you're teaching something.
Okay. I haven't seen any of those yet. I guess I'm not looking a lot.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, really what you need to do with reels is just dedicate time to watching reels, watching like other people's reels, right? Because all of a sudden you just start getting inspiration. You start seeing what other people are doing, people in your field, in other fields, and that's really the only way to figure out exactly what your content is going to look like. Just seeing what other people are doing out there and what's working for other people.
Hmm. I think the same thing works with like building your blog or like learning marketing. Yeah. Is you just have to kind of pay attention to what other people are doing.
And absolutely. Research.
Right. Yeah. And I was talking to someone about, market research. I mean, we didn't ever say the term market research in our conversation, but essentially that's what it was like. Sure. Learning your audience. What do they want? What do they need? And what they've tried before. Does that play into your role as like a branding expert? Do you ever use any of the market research or?
Absolutely. I think understanding who you're marketing to and what is working for your competition and what's not working for your competition, no matter what, that's always going to help you figure out what your brand should look like or sound like, or, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So this identifying your competition, that is scary to me. I don't know why. When I think about competition, it's like I automatically label myself as the loser in competition. I don't know. I just don't like thinking about competing with other people, but we were competing for people's attention and
for eyeballs.
And
yeah.
Eyeballs. Okay. Okay. So it's important. Yeah.
Yeah. And at the same time, I hate the word competitor.
Right.
The people
it's
who
an
are your
icky word.
Exactly. You can end up collaborating with them. You know, they're right. We're all in this crazy mess together.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, go on.
Oh, so I think as far as, you know, personal branding as a blogger, what you want to make sure that you have is a very clear message of, you know, what it is that you're offering with your blog in like one sentence. You have to be able to identify that. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is great photos.
I was going to ask you about imagery and pictures and how important that is.
Yeah, it's really important for a website, for a blog, for social media. I hate taking photos, but I pushed myself. I have a friend who's a photographer, and now every so often we'll do a personal branding shoot so that I just have a pile of photos that I can use for Instagram to get my message out there, and then I can use on my website, you know?
Right. Yeah. Is video important on your site too, or is that...
Video is really effective for social media. It typically does really well. I'm not very good at creating it. Mm-hmm. So even though, you know, I have a degree in video television. I think that, you know, I know how to do some.
Do you really have a degree in video television? That's so funny. And you know,
I do.
I have a degree in music and I don't like singing or anything anymore.
Just, okay. Thank you.
So yeah. Okay. I get it. Yeah. So the clear, so if I'm a blogger,
yeah,
I definitely need a clear message.
Yep.
Which I think is important because, you know, I see a lot of blogs where it's just kind of like mine used to be just randomness, mm-hmm. and I'm not quite sure what I'm supposed to get out of it. And then you kind of confuse people if your message isn't clear either.
Like, exactly.
This week you were talking about the news and now you're talking about how your baking cookie went disastrous, whatever, right? Yes. It's just not consistent. And then visuals are really important. So if someone, so let's say they have their clear message and they have their visuals and they're writing content, it's pretty good content. Mm-hmm. Where does storytelling play into this?
The way that all of it comes together should tell a story. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. If you plan out your photos really well, your photos are going to be illustrating who mm-hmm. you are. Mm-hmm. Right. So the story, that's where the story comes in, who you mm-hmm. are and how mm-hmm. your reader is going to connect to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So they, because it kind of goes back to that, what we were saying earlier, like they want to see authenticity and they want to make a connection. They want to emotion. Emotion is important.
Yes. Emotion is so important.
I recently wrote a post and I said that I think I figured out how to make sure that my blog's message is clear. And it's by answering this question. What do I want my readers to do, think, or feel after they've visited my blog?
Exactly. That's right? Exactly it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then once you know that, that can really kind of focus you in on what you should be doing. Like if you know what you want them to do, and it's important to like, just connection. It is important. I'm learning that connection is important mm-hmm. because I've been, connecting with my readers, holding, now it's become like a monthly event where I have a Zoom, I call it virtual cocktail party for writers. Awesome. It's just like a really small group of us. It's 9 people. But I was really surprised by like how many, especially women, just want to connect with other women who write. And we just want to share and want to encourage. And I just wish that more people would do that or be open to it.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. That networking piece is huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It can be kind of tricky to get people involved sometimes. And maybe it does go back to the writers being very isolated or I don't know what it is, but it does kind of take some coaxing to get people out of their little hole. Like, come on in and join us, you know?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, reaching out to people on Instagram and places like that, right? You're not just looking for your future readers, you're also looking for people in your own community. Because then all of a sudden you can all kind of prop each other up and you're all of a sudden you're shouting each other out and all that kind of stuff too. And that can be really great.
Yeah. So how important, when you said that you have like a group of women around you to kind of build you up, when you first started writing, or well, you're not writing, but you're marketing. Mm-hmm. Did you have some pushback from people like discouraging you from getting into that? And
oh, yeah, just kind of the blank looks of I was actually dating somebody at the time, right? And I was like, I think I'm just gonna go out and do my own thing. And he's like, so what is it, like an agency? you're just not gonna get another job? It's terrifying, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You know, I see this a lot though. I see this on Twitter a lot. A lot of writers, I see them posting things like, you know, my husband said something terrible about my writing, people, my family saying, what do you can't earn any money like doing this, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. And it's really sad because it kind of discourages them from pursuing what they really want to do.
Yeah. And I think that's where having a group of people who were doing what you're doing and finding a little bit of success, right? They don't have to all be super successful, but as far as they're taking the steps that you want to be taking yourself, I think having that kind of support's really important.
Mm-hmm. As women,
yes,
it's sometimes, let's say we get to the point where we have an audience, we're putting out valuable content and we're ready to start monetizing. Mm-hmm. That's tricky for women because we feel guilty about charging.
Yes.
We always want to be nice and please people, mm-hmm. and we don't want people to talk about us. Do you have a blog?
No. In my 20s, I had a dating blog that was just horrendous.
But even starting your business.
Yeah.
How do you price your stuff, or did you get any pushback on that's way too expensive, or I'm not paying that much, or
oh my god, I get it all the time. I still get it, especially like as I've raised my prices. And I think when I first started out, I had to completely shift my mindset around money, because that's exactly what it is. You're a people pleaser, right? Mm-hmm. And you want to help everybody. Mm-hmm. And so there are certain things that people told me that helped a lot. And the first thing is, if I'm not making money, I'm not going to be able to continue doing the thing that allows me to help more people. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so that helps a lot. And I don't know, I think it's like a muscle that you start working, and I have to constantly be conscious of it, because all of a sudden I'll start backsliding and I'll start giving more discounts and, you know, don't worry about it. It's okay. And I only hurt myself that way, you know?
Because I know when at one of my events, and I was talking to this group of women, and that came up, like, we want to monetize, but we don't want to price things. We always undervalue ourselves. And when you undervalue yourself, you start to feel resentful, mm-hmm. because you're doing so much work, and you know it's worth more than what you're charging. But at the same time, you're scared of people talking about you and questioning you. And it's just this place of frustration that we're stuck in, you know?
Oh, it's a mess.
It is a mess. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I remember hearing someone say that it's not like you're pricing yourself or your value as a person. You're pricing the value of your product, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Okay. And what they're going to get out of it, you know, especially if the product that you're creating is going to make somebody else more money. Well, then that's more valuable to them, you know?
Right. And it would be a disservice to not offer what you're selling. I mean, if your product can really help people,
then
you need to sell it, right?
Yeah. And so one of the things I've done is I have tiers, you know, so that there is an entry level thing where I can help people, but it's not as time consuming. And then there's, you know, the full, like, I will build the whole thing for you for people who do have the budget. And so that way you're creating a value structure instead of just trying to give everything away.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. In the beginning, though, is it necessary to give a lot of stuff away for free in the beginning?
No, I think stuff away for free is hurting yourself, because you're undervaluing yourself. When you undervalue yourself, it's harder to pull yourself out of that. Mm-hmm. And so there's, you know, perceived value is a really big thing. People see a price tag and they think that that's the worth that they're getting out of it, right? Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden people also, you know, especially like if you're a writer and you're doing something for free, people don't show up in the same way.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Because then they don't value your time either. But
exactly.
If you're making them, you know, put their money where their mouth is, if you will, then mm-hmm. they'll show up when they need to be there as your client.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're pricing yourself, not yourself, if you're pricing, it's so hard to, but if you're pricing your product at what it's truly worth and not undervaluing, you might not need to work as hard. Because if you, like, for example, if you're having, I don't know, if you're doing coaching and you're only charging like, I don't know, $100 an hour.
Right.
How many clients are you going to need to really make it by?
Yeah. You know I mean? And then you're overworked. And then are you really right. providing the value that you want to be able to provide?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think these are things that we really think about. I think we just get so caught up in the,
yeah.
You know what it is? It is exactly what you said earlier. It's mindset. It's mindset around money. Like, we really need to shift our thinking around our relationship with money.
Yeah.
And our relationship to ourselves. Like, that's mm-hmm. a big one also, because if we don't believe in ourselves, don't believe in our just essential value as a human.
Yep.
When it comes to pricing our work, yeah, we're going to undervalue.
And so, right? And it's all up here. It really, really is. You know, in the beginning, I had done some work for friends just to kind of build my portfolio. And I remember being at a networking event and making the decision I was going to stop calling them my friends and start calling them my clients. Mm. Even though money hadn't exchanged hands, really, like, maybe somebody would have thrown me a little bit of money. But all of a sudden, just by shifting the words that I was using to describe myself and describe my work, and I started calling myself an entrepreneur instead of just, I'm kind of doing this and a little bit of branding, right. There's some web design, right? All of a sudden people started taking me more seriously because I was taking myself more seriously.
Right. Yes. And why is it so scary to do that? Because I went through the same thing where I actually have a client, a writing client. I'm a writing coach, but to call myself a writing coach was really hard.
Yes.
Because I don't know what I felt I needed a degree in writing coaching. I mean, I don't know, but it's just kind of like stepping into that power. It just,
absolutely.
I don't know if I felt I wasn't worthy of calling myself that. I don't know, but
it feels a little deceitful because you've never called yourself that before, but imposter syndrome.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's a big one.
Gosh. Oh my God. Yeah. But then you remember, we all have it. Like, even the most successful people at some point in time feel like imposters.
Right. So I guess faking it till you make it. I mean, is that what you kind of had to do?
Yep.
Yeah, it really do, because
yeah.
Otherwise you can drive yourself crazy thinking that you're just not even worth it. You're just,
and
you know.
The funny thing about the whole fake it till you make it phenomenon is that you're really most of the time only faking it to yourself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right? You're actually doing the work that makes you the thing that you think you're faking.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You know, another thing I think happens is that we just spend way too much time in other people's heads. Like, you know, we can never know for sure what anyone else is really thinking.
Yeah.
We spend so much time in their head trying to figure out what they might be thinking about me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've completely abandoned my own thinking. I've completely abandoned myself, you know, and it's that can keep you stuck.
Absolutely.
Mind your own business, right? I think I got that from what is her name? Katie Byron. Have you heard of her?
Oh, yeah.
I think I got that from one of her books. Like mind your own business, mind your own thoughts. And
yeah. What other people think about me is none of my business.
Exactly. Yeah. Kara, this has been great. It's an hour already.
Gosh. Oh my goodness.
I really enjoyed talking to you. You have such an interesting background. I love your take on brand. I've never talked to anyone about branding before. So this has been great. Thank you. Tell us where we can find you.
So you can find me on Instagram at Karen Happel Marketing, and my website is KarenHappel.com.
I will post those links, and I'll talk to you. I'm going to stop recording and chat with you a bit afterwards.
Yeah, of course.
But thank you so much for joining me. This was great fun.
This has been so fun. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
That was a very inspiring conversation and a very fun conversation. Karen is very fun to talk to. I hope that you check out her website and her services and her social media, especially her Insta Reels. They are hilarious. And if you need help with personal branding, if you're a writer, especially a writer of nonfiction, author of nonfiction, then I hope that you do reach out to her because she knows her stuff. In the meantime, don't forget to visit my blog, xazo.com, this Sunday for my big takeaways from my conversation with Karen. You can follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Motivation to Write and Twitter at Ebony Haywood. Thank you so much for joining me this week, for taking the time to join me. And next week, I will have another fabulous guest. So tune in and I hope to see you soon. Okay, bye-bye.